Imagine a decorated homicide detective who spent decades solving unsolvable murders suddenly turning his investigative skills toward the most controversial cold case in history, the resurrection of Jesus. J. Warner Wallace was a hardened atheist for 35 years before applying his forensic expertise to the New Testament claims. What began as an attempt to debunk Christianity led to an unexpected conclusion. The evidence pointed toward the reliability of the Gospels and the truth of the resurrection. This transformation from vocal skeptic to Christian apologist carries unique weight, precisely because Wallace approached faith not with blind belief, but with the same rigorous standards he applied to murder investigations. When we encounter extraordinary claims, our natural response is skepticism. But what happens when a professional skeptic, someone trained to question everything and follow only the evidence, finds himself convinced by the very case he set out to disprove? Are philosophical assumptions often determine conclusions before examining evidence? I witnessed this in criminal investigations when my veteran partner wrongly blamed a husband for murder based on his belief that spouses kill spouses. The actual killer was a neighbor who staged the scene. I approached Christianity with similar bias. Raised by an atheist detective father in the Star Trek generation, I believed science would eventually explain everything naturally. My philosophical naturalism prevented me from considering supernatural explanations, even when evidence pointed that way. Courts instruct jurors to keep an open mind and not let bias, sympathy, prejudice, or public opinion influence your decision, because preconceptions derail truth-seeking. When investigating Christianity, I suspended my naturalistic bias to follow evidence objectively. This doesn't mean rushing to supernatural explanations. It means being open to all possibilities, including a creator who might intervene in his creation. Have you considered how your assumptions might filter the evidence you encounter? Detectives solve cases without witnesses by using abductive reasoning, inferring the most reasonable explanation from available evidence. Unlike deductive or inductive reasoning, it seeks the simplest explanation, accounting for all facts. In a suspicious death investigation, we evaluate possibilities systematically: natural death, accident, suicide, or homicide. When finding a young man face down with multiple stab wounds, only homicide reasonably explains all evidence. This approach applies to historical investigations, including claims about Jesus. Dr. Gary Habermas's minimal facts approach focuses on four widely accepted points. 1. Jesus died by crucifixion and was buried in a known tomb. 2. Jesus' tomb was found empty 3 days later. 3. Jesus' disciples believe they encountered him alive after his death. 4. Jesus' followers were radically transformed from hiding in fear to boldly proclaiming their message despite persecution. When examining explanations, each naturalistic theory shows significant weaknesses. The resurrection hypothesis, while supernatural, requires fewer assumptions and better accounts for both the empty tomb and the transformed lives of disciples willing to die for their testimony. Most people wrongly assume circumstantial evidence is weaker than direct evidence, but legally, they carry equal weight. Many successful cold case prosecutions rely entirely on circumstantial evidence. Consider investigating a murder where the suspect owns the state's only yellow 1972 Karmann Ghia matching witness descriptions, rare boots matching crime scene footprints, a suspiciously bleached baseball bat consistent with the murder weapon, and jeans with unusual spot cleaning. While technically these could be coincidences, it's not reasonable to believe so. This principle applies to evidence for Christianity. The universe's beginning, requiring a cause, its fine-tuning for life, information content in DNA, and our universal recognition of objective moral laws each have potential alternative explanations. However, the cumulative case makes God's existence the most reasonable conclusion, just as our murder suspect's collection of coincidences makes his guilt the most reasonable inference. When evaluating witness reliability in criminal cases, we examine four questions. Were they present? Can they be corroborated? Are their statements accurate? Do they have ulterior motives? The apostles consistently emphasized their eyewitness status as the foundation of their preaching. From Peter's Pentecost declaration that we are all witnesses, to their insistence before the Sanhedrin that we cannot help speaking about what we have seen and heard. From my detective experience, reliable eyewitness accounts share four characteristics found in the Gospels. They're perspectival. Each witness describes events from their unique viewpoint, creating apparent contradictions that require integration. They're personal. Witnesses use their own language and highlight details meaningful to them. They contain areas of agreement. Witnesses often describe dramatic moments similarly. And later statements frequently fill gaps left by earlier testimonies. The Gospels exhibit all these characteristics of genuine eyewitness testimony. Their apparent contradictions and idiosyncrasies aren't flaws but strengths, exactly what we'd expect from truthful accounts. When have you ever heard multiple people describe the same event identically? Wouldn't such uniformity actually raise suspicion? As a detective who's broken many conspiracies, I know successful ones require few participants, excellent communication, short duration, strong relationships, and minimal pressure. As a former atheist, I dismissed the resurrection as a conspiracy until I applied my professional experience to examine it. The apostles' alleged conspiracy fails every test. It would have required at least 12 conspirators, potentially up to 500 eyewitnesses mentioned by Paul. Unlike suspects in adjacent rooms, these men were scattered across the Roman Empire from Rome to India with no way to coordinate their stories given first-century communication limitations. Their claims persisted not for days but decades. John maintained his testimony for nearly 60 years. Most convincingly, the apostles endured extreme persecution. Historical accounts describe their brutal martyrdoms. Peter crucified upside down, James executed by sword, Thomas killed by a mob, yet none recanted. This distinguishes them from other martyrs throughout history. Many have died for what they sincerely believed. But the apostles weren't dying for a mistaken belief. They would have known if they were lying about witnessing the resurrection. Santiago Ortega, a cocaine-addicted bank robber I arrested, exemplifies a one-decision Christian, someone who trusted Jesus without examining supporting evidence. When pressures mounted, his unsupported beliefs crumbled. My journey was opposite. I investigated Christianity's claims before embracing faith. Moving from belief that the Gospels were reliable to belief in Jesus required abandoning my naturalistic presuppositions. I evaluated the apostles as eyewitnesses who passed every test. I remember surrendering my biases and moving from intellectual assent to personal trust, like an officer trusting his bulletproof vest. The apostles didn't die for opinions. They sacrificed themselves because they understood Jesus was the way, the truth, and the life. My conversion transformed me from a cynical cop into someone with growing compassion. I'm a Christian today because Christianity is true. The evidence points to Jesus' resurrection and deity. The question is whether we'll follow where it leads, even if it challenges our worldview. Will you examine the evidence with an open mind, or has the case been closed before investigation begins?